Anybody exhausted? No. Enlightened? Ready for more, right? This is going to be story night. Saturday night at the movies. Hare Krishna style. So you can be relaxed. There's some nice points. The meditation for this evening is Krishna's empowerment, Krishna Shakti, circling back to the topic from Friday evening. There are many wonderful examples in Krishna's pastimes of empowering devotees. And one of the stark examples of Krishna's empowering devotees is Krishna's withdrawal of the empowerment from Arjuna when Arjuna was assisting the queens to go from Dwarka to Hastinapur. So that's a whole section. It's discussed to some degree without the same all the embellishments in Mahabharata in Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10 Chapter 80. Canto 11 Chapter 80 before Krishna's departure in relation to Krishna's departure. Because after Krishna's departure comes Kali Yuga, and that's Canto 12. But there's a much more detailed description, very similar, but more details in Mahabharata, the Maushala Parva section of Mahabharata. So that's the reference source. And before the Maushala Parva, it makes reference to something that's from an earlier section of Mahabharata, Sri Parva. This is some days after the Kurukshetra battle was finished. Krishna, with some associates, went to pay his respects to Gandhari. So most of you know, but Gandhari was the mother of 100 sons that didn't become king, because those 100 sons were born after the first son of Kunti. So those of you not familiar, there's a few people here who are most likely not familiar with this Mahabharata history. There were three brothers. The eldest, Dhritarashtra, next was Pandu, and next was Vidura. Brothers in the sense that they had the same father, although they had different mothers. They had the same father. Vyasa was the father. So, Dhritarashtra was born blind, so that disqualified him from becoming king. But the marriage arrangement for his marriage was Gandhari from Gandhar. Sound like Kandahar? Because it's the same. Kandahar is a place today. And where is Kandahar? Afghanistan. So Gandhari was from that kingdom. Thus Gandhari. And she was selected to be married to Dhritarashtra. As soon as she found out that Dhritarashtra was blind, before her marriage, she put a blindfold on, so she would not be above or greater than or more qualified than her good husband. She blindfolded herself voluntarily. And there's only one example where she unblindfolded herself, and that is to protect Duryodhana. There's a long story. I'm not going to go into that part of the Mahabharata story. But she wanted to protect Duryodhana so he would be invincible by the power of her asceticism and her austerity. Krishna knew. Anyway, there's detail, don't go there. So, when she, because Dhritarashtra was the elder brother, but blind so he couldn't become king, her hope, Gandhari's hope, was that if the sons of Dhritarashtra were born first, then Dhritarashtra's sons and her sons would be entitled to the throne. But that's not what happened. What happened was her pregnancy lasted a long time. And when she got news that Kunti gave birth first, that Kunti is the wife or queen of the second brother, Pandu, when she heard that Kunti's son was born first, she pounded her abdomen, and from her abdomen came a lump of flesh. Like, yuck. A lump of... She was ambitious to from that point to have her son become king. But it wasn't a son, it was a lump of flesh. So she didn't know what to do. She was advised, very interesting procedure, take the lump of flesh, divide the lump of flesh into 100 pieces, put those 100 pieces into pots, and cover the pots, and after some time, 100 sons will be born from the pot. And when the first son was born, all these terrible omens, like, you know, without all the Mahabharata list of terrible omens. And the advice was given, that means this son is a demon. So this son, before he grows up, he should be removed from the royal palace. And she was too attached, and Dhritarashtra was too attached, and so he grew up as Duryodhana, wicked-minded and spirited Duryodhana. So, when the Kurukshetra battle was finished, Duryodhana and her 99 other sons were all killed. So Krishna went to pay his respects to Gandhari after all the funerals we performed, etc., etc. And in Sri Parva, which comes before the Moksha Lila, she acted in a certain way that was inspired by Supersoul. You know, that's Krishna. Krishna went to see her, and she acted in relation to Krishna in a way that was inspired by Krishna from within her heart. And she did something like what we're all very familiar with, at least those familiar with the first canto of Bhagavatam. Maharaj Parikshit was cursed by a young boy to be killed by a snake bird in 7 days. So similarly, Gandhari cursed Krishna. She was blaming Krishna. You could have, but you didn't, prevent the killing of all these millions, 360 million soldiers. That's a lot of soldiers. In the Kurukshetra battle in 18 days. You could have stopped it. And you didn't. So I hold you responsible, and I curse you that as I have had to lose my descendants in this bloodbath of the Kurukshetra battle, you will also have to lose your descendants in a similar fashion. And she specifically gave a time frame to that, 36 years. Now there's some discussion, you know, why 36, why not some other number? And there's, you know, interesting speculations about why 36, but 36. So that's important in the disappearance of Krishna. One is she was empowered by Krishna to do what she did. In a similar fashion, we heard in about Ramayana, or Govinda Raja's commentary on Ramayana, that Mantra and Kaikeyi did their thing, inspired by Ram, from within their heart to do their thing. And although their thing looked horrible, it was part of his leela. It was like a really essential part of his leela, to go to the forest and give his association to the sages, because that's one of the three basic reasons that the Supreme Lord appears, Pritranaya Sadhanam. And he gave his personal, not like just appeared in their heart in meditation, in his Bhagavan feature he came to them. And that arrangement was made by what Kaikeyi and Mantra did by Super Soul within his heart, the Acharya's comment. So similarly, Gandhari did what Gandhari did. She was actually a very elevated person, but there were some forces at play in her that made it a perfect setup for Krishna to inspire from within her heart to curse him, and he accepted. What Krishna said in reply is, you know, three things. I accept. And I made multiple attempts to bring a peace settlement, but your son Duryodhana rejected them. And the third thing was, he said multiple attempted murders, and according to laws of Manu, that's punishable by death. They were punishable according to Dharma. So you're faulting me for executing Dharma. So be it. I accept. 36 years later, Krishna's in Dwarka, and Moshala Parva opens with the same as Canto 10, Chapter 79, Canto 11, Chapter 79, Bhagavatam, where Vasudeva is Krishna's father, Vasudeva and Devaki were residing in Dwarka, and Vasudeva wanted to have a festival. So he invited many sages into his palace, because he was awarded a royal palace, because he was a royal personality, and Narada, and a whole long list of sages, Angira, and Atri, and this one, that one, the other one, were all present, and they performed rituals for the benefit, for the upliftment and flourishing of the Dwarka kingdom. Krishna was there as living or residing in the same palace with Vasudeva, though he had his own palaces. He was honoring his father on that occasion. And when the occasion was over, Narada suggested the sages then go to another holy place named Pindraka, and there they could be served very nicely by the Dwarkavasis, the Yadu dynasty ruling kings. And so they went. And when they went to Pindraka, by another divine arrangement, that is Super Soul, within the heart of the young boys, headed by Samba, they had Samba dressed up in a sari, and looking down, they said that there's this dark-eyed young lady, she wants to ask you a question, but she's too shy. So we'd like to ask the question on her behalf. She's very eager to have a son as her child, because there was this bulging, protruding belly. And could you tell this young maiden whether she will have a son as a child? And then Narada spoke. You know, Narada, Krishna's bhakti, Shakti, Shaktivesh avatar, spoke and said in one sentence, the child that we born will be a lump of iron and will bring the destruction of the whole dynasty of the Yadus. So there's two curses, Gandhari's curse and the Brahmana's curse. And so this is, Krishna was empowering different devotees to do different things according to his purpose. His purpose was many things, but one of the things was concluding his pastimes. It was a very dramatic conclusion to his pastimes, which Vyasadeva explains later, why he did the way he did. Vyasadeva explains it to Arjuna. So the boys are panic-stricken. They remove the sari, and sure enough, there was a lump of iron. And they go to back to Dwarka and inform Ugrasena, who's the king, what just happened in the curse of the Brahmanas. And the citizens of Dwarka, they have respect for Brahmanas and Brahminical culture and the curses of Brahmanas. They know what's going to happen. The whole of Dwarka is going to be destroyed. The whole dynasty is going to be destroyed because of these boys. So Ugrasena makes a mistake, inspired by Krishna. He doesn't consult Krishna. He doesn't consult his brahmanas. He just makes a decision. And the decision he makes is, well, the boys shouldn't feel bad. Just take that iron, grind it into powder, and throw it into the sea. Finished. Problem is over. Problem wasn't over. Almost all of that iron club was ground into powder, except there was one piece that wouldn't grind. So that was also thrown into the sea. And the powder that was thrown into the sea washed back to the shore near Prabhas, which is not so far from Dwarka. Those of you that came to the Dwarka Yatra, remember we went to Prabhas Kshetra, not far from Dwarka. And as it washed to the shore, the iron pieces, like powder, collected in the root structure of some reeds by the shore, and they became iron hard. And the lump that wouldn't grind into powder was swallowed by a fish. And the fish was caught in a net, and the fisherman sold the fish caught in the net with the iron inside him to a hunter. The hunter opened the fish. Sure enough, there was a piece of iron. He took that piece of iron to fashion an arrow, and that arrow later became involved in Krishna's departure. So the hunter's name was Jara. Interesting name. So after the curse of the Brahmanas back in Dwarka, there was a period of time, it didn't happen all at once, but a period of time where two things mainly are described in Mahabharata and also in the Bhagavatam. Really serious, you know how a long, long list of omens, bad omens. From the sky, on the ground, in the air, and people, and misbehavior, and uncharacteristic conduct by the residents of Dwarka were abundant. And the second thing was time personified. No, who's seen time? But time personified appeared and was moving about Dwarka, peering in windows, entering into people's homes through open doors. And he was seen, and according to Mahabharata, thousands of arrows were thrown at him because they're warriors, they're kshatriyas. And there was no effect. So Krishna saw the omens and heard about the form of time moving about Dwarka. And Krishna decided to call an assembly in the Sudharma hall. So everyone came because Krishna called everybody to come. And Krishna made a few announcements. Now, Ugrasena was still the king, and his father was still there, but Krishna was making these announcements. These omens tell great misfortune. And my recommendation, which everybody accepted because Krishna recommended it, was that we leave Dwarka. And the men should go to Prabhas, perform specific rituals, and he identified the rituals they should perform, and given charity to the brahmanas in ways that he described, because this is the way to atone for this offense made against the brahmanas. It's a scripturally recommended, you go to a holy place and do those things. And that's the man. And the ladies and children should go at once also with all of their assets and property and wealth and everything to another place. So it was agreed that they would go. So that other place was a place they stopped at on the way. Sankodhara is said in Mahabharata to be on the way between Dwarka and Prabhas. So this whole caravan left Dwarka, and the ladies and children and so forth, elderly, were left at this other place, Sankodhara, and then the men continued on. There was a lot of men. The number is in the millions. In fact, the number is 560 million, something like that. So when they got there, as Krishna and Balaram were there, when Narada uttered the curse, everyone would be destroyed except Krishna and Balaram. So that's what happened. So they went to have their big festival, and they did rituals that are proper rituals, but they also had this particular kind of intoxicating sweet beverage called Maireya beverage. Maireya is something that somehow was used during these rituals, and by Krishna's inspiration, they all indulged in taking some, and they became a little tipsy. More than a little tipsy, they became intoxicated with rice wine. And then here's the detail from Mahabharata is Satyaki, who was involved in the Kurukshetra battle, but was also a resident in Dwarka. Satyaki normally didn't speak his mind on the topic, but Satyaki held some grudge against Kritavarma for two things, but he only mentioned first the one thing. The first thing was he, Kritavarma, was involved in the conspiracy by Ashwatthama to behead the sleeping sons of Draupadi. He knew about it, he didn't do it, but he was conspiring, he's part of the plot, to inspire Ashwatthama to go do this horrible thing. And Satyaki knew it. So in this intoxicated state, he spoke very harshly. Kritavarma, what kind of a noble person are you that you would do such a thing? You'd be involved in such a thing. And Krishna's first son, Pradyumna, had a close friendship with Satyaki, and he stood up and went, yeah, Satyaki's right. And Satyaki, being intoxicated, Kritavarma, being intoxicated, spoke harshly back. And Kritavarma said, what kind of virtuous person are you to fault me? You killed with an arrow during the Kurukshetra battle one of the soldiers. Burishrava, now, I don't know the detail in Mahabharata, but Burishrava was in meditation during the battle with his weapons to the side, and Satyaki killed him. What kind of noble man are you? And the fire was answered with fire. This is, you know, from the Dhruva story, it's the react instead of respond. They were reacting and reacting, and this inspired by Super Soul to do so. And then Satyaki said, you know, this son of Hridika, didn't even call him by his name, but his ancestry, he was also involved in the conspiracy to kill Satrajit. So those of you that know the Shamantaka Jewel story, you know the Shamantaka Jewel story? A little bit? Satrajit, it's a long story. He was killed. Who killed him? Shatadanva killed him. Shatadanva was put up to the murder by two people. Kritavarma and Akura. They wanted the jewel that Satrajit had to be given to Krishna. And Krishna wanted it to be given to Ugrasena. But Satrajit was attached. So Krishna had asked and he declined. And so there was other reasons as described in that canto of the Bhagavatam. The other reasons had to do with they also wanted the hand of Satyabhama. And so they had animosity towards Satrajit because they didn't get his daughter in marriage. Anyway, palace intrigue. And Shatadanva was killed by Krishna. Akura fled with the Shamantaka jewel, and then that came back. But we don't hear too much about Kritavarma. Well, Kritavarma was involved in the murder plot. And here he is in Prabhas being accused by publicly by Satyaki to say he was involved in the murder plot of Satyabhama's father. And Satyabhama is right there. And Satyabhama, no, I thought the ladies were left at a distance, but this Mahabharata says she was right there. And Satyabhama went to Krishna and started crying. And then, so that was too much. And Satyaki, you know, the react became a double react, became a triple react, and he exploded and said, I take a vow. I'm going to take Kritavarma's life. He doesn't deserve to live. He's a attempted murderer. And he rushed at Kritavarma right before everybody with his sword. He cut off his head. And Satyaki, in this rage, started with his sword attacking others. Now, he's in the Yadu clan, and then the Vrishni and Bhoja and Andaka clan, another dynasty, and they took exception because Kritavarma was in their clan. And so they started to fight. And they attacked Satyaki, and Pradyumna, Krishna's son, stood by the side of Satyaki, and they ganged up on Satyaki and Pradyumna and killed them. When Krishna saw Pradyumna killed right in front of him, he went and took one of those reeds that was like iron and started thrashing people that were involved in the ones that had jumped Pradyumna and killed Pradyumna. And then it escalated into a fratricidal war, using Prabhupada's term. And a very large number of soldiers were killed. 560 million. That's a lot of people. Like, you know, at a football game. How many people go to a football game? You know, 80,000, 100,000, whatever it is. A million. It's like, you know, 560 million? was the population of the United States. Anyway, without going into it. It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. Lying dead. Lord Krishna and Balaram survived. And there was one other person. Actually, it says there was two persons, but at least keeping it simple. Daruka, Krishna's chariot driver and personal servant, was there. So when the bloodbath was over, they went together looking for Balaram. And they found Balaram. They found him seated by the ocean, because Prabhas is by the ocean. Prabhas is, by the way, the same place where Krishna went and entered into the ocean to find the son of Sandipani Muni and brought the son of Sandipani Muni back to Sandipani Muni. Same place. The holy place. Prabhas. It's one of the places that Vidura, when he was going on pilgrimage for more than 36 years, I've been accustomed to saying 34, that it had to be more than 36, because when he visited Prabhas, the Yadu dynasty had already been destroyed. Anyway, so he was by the sea in a trance of meditation. Krishna saw, Daruka saw, as he was seated in his trance of meditation, that means his mind was fixed on Krishna, he opened his mouth. From his mouth came a white naga, or serpent. Balaram ascended onto that white serpent, and the white serpent went off into the distance back to the spiritual world. There's the end of Balaram's pastimes. Krishna saw that. He turned to Daruka and said, quickly, go at once back to Hastinapur, because very soon the whole of Dwarka is going to submerge in the sea. And I want Arjuna to come and give protection to the queens and take them back for safety, because Dwarka is finished and all the men folk, they're gone. Bring Arjuna at once. Imagine his emotional state, his, you know, nervous system was shot. And he started to go, but he apparently never made it, because the rest of the story speaks like this. Krishna, Balaram's gone, Daruka's gone, and 560 million soldiers are gone. So Krishna is sitting under a peepal tree, resting, leaning against the tree with his foot up. And Jara, remember him, the hunter that found the piece of iron inside the fish and had fashioned an arrow point, thought the foot of Krishna was the face of a deer, so he shot the foot of Krishna. Now, the Mahabharata says specifically, he didn't. Some places it says he shot Krishna in the heel. But the Mahabharata version that I referred to, two of them, say he didn't hit his heel, it just grazed his foot. But in any case, who dies from a wound in your foot? So the hunter came looking for the deer. It wasn't a deer, it was Krishna, and it was, what a sinful activity I've done. He fell at Krishna's feet, weeping and admonishing himself, praising Krishna. Please forgive this sinful act. I'm ready to atone in any way that you wish. And then Krishna spoke to him. And there's a detail that's not in Mahabharata, it's found elsewhere. Jara was an incarnation or a manifestation of Bhrigu Muni, who was cursed by Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, when Bhrigu kicked Krishna in the chest, or Vishnu in the chest. She cursed him, you become a hunter. In any case, Krishna says, O Jara, do not fear. You are an instrument in my pastimes. This is Mahabharata. Please get up. What has been done is actually my desire. You have seen and touched me, and thus you are now free of all sin. Now, go to the abode of the pious and do not fear. So, all of this is being enacted by instruments of Krishna's will. Jara is trembling, fearful, grateful. His heart is in great turmoil. He circumambulates Krishna three times. Vaikuntha Vimana comes and takes him back to the spiritual world. And then there's some detail that is interesting. Krishna, Daruka suddenly comes back. He didn't make it to Hastinapur. He just came running back. He couldn't bear Krishna's separation. And so he literally falls at Krishna's feet and starts wailing and crying and saying many things. How is this possible? He observes all of Krishna's paraphernalia ascending back to the spiritual world. His chariot, his weapons, his horses. It all just floats away and disappears into the spiritual sky. This is Daruka, whose business has been the chariot driver. The chariot's gone. The horses are gone. The weapons are gone. Everything gone. It's just him and Krishna left. So he realizes it's over. And he can't bear it. Imagine his nervous system. What emotions he's feeling. Krishna gives him some service. That helps devotees stay fixed and be able to carry on with their life, is to have some service to carry out. That's what he did with Uddhava. That's what he's doing with Daruka. So he says, you should go, look at my condition. Balaram is gone. Everything's gone. It's over. So please, immediately, swiftly as possible, go back to Dwarka, inform Ugrasena and my father Vasudev. They must at once leave Dwarka. Those who still live in Dwarka, within a few days, they should know the whole of Dwarka is going to be submerged again in the ocean. Please make these arrangements. I'm instructing you. All the paraphernalia, all the household items, all the wealth, everything in Dwarka should be taken from Dwarka, because it's going to be underwater shortly. Arjuna should take the ladies to Indraprastha or Hastinapur for protection. Go at once. And the parting words were, be peaceful. We shall meet again in another place. Because he's an eternal associate of Krishna. This time, Daruka doesn't just make an attempt to go to Hastinapur. He goes to Dwarka. He has to save lives of everybody. So he departs. And then comes this interesting controversy for some. Krishna could do so many things, but what he decided to do was leave material form, or in universal form, or a form in his likeness. And when he return to his eternal abode. It's one of those, you know, much talked about details of Krishna's pastimes. Satisfying and pacifying the hearts and the minds of worldly people who think that Krishna has assumed a form, when he says clearly he hasn't. So, Dwaraka returns to Dwaraka, and in his emotional state, he tells everything that just happened to Ugrasena and Vasudev. And meanwhile, back in Hastinapur, Super Soul, Krishna, has prompted, this we find in the first canto of Bhagavatam, but Krishna, as Super Soul of Yudhisthira, has prompted sending Arjuna to go to Dwaraka and finding out what's up. They had the intuitive sense Krishna is going to finish his pastimes. So Arjuna was already sent. So Arjuna shows up in Dwaraka around the same time that Dwaraka shows up in Dwaraka. Arjuna wondering what's happened and Dwaraka telling what's happened. And both have the same idea that everyone has to return. Leave Dwaraka at once. So Arjuna makes a plan. He said in 7 days, we're all leaving. So gather everything together, we're all going to go. And Vasudev says, I can't maintain my life without my son. I'm going to fast until death. Arjuna says, my brothers will feel the same way as soon as they come to understand what has happened, but we have our duty to do. The duty that we have to do includes performing the funeral rites for the departed relatives and so forth and so on. And then we can do what we have to do to join Krishna in his eternal pastimes. Vasudev can't wait. The very next morning, he departs his body, and Devaki, Rohini, and another one of the wives, they enter into the funeral pyre and they go wherever Vasudev went. And so the whole of Dwaraka, what was remaining after the 560 million descendants were killed in Prabhas, and some were left in this other place, they gather all their things and they're ready to go. One of the places they go is Prabhas, and for some days it takes to perform the funeral rites for all those 560 million people, because that's a religious duty to do. And as they're traveling, they have to, it's not a 1 day journey to go to Hastinapur. They stop at a place known as Panchajala province. Panchajala province was at the time known for being infested with robbers. So the robbers came to know all this wealth from Dwaraka is passing through our place. So they concealed themselves or took on the costumes of cowherd's men and attacked the queens. And so this is the empowerment of Arjuna. So Arjuna was empowered by Krishna to do what Arjuna did at the Kurukshetra battle. But in this situation, Arjuna's empowerment had been withdrawn. So he did the religious thing. He ordered them, stop. And if you don't stop, then I'll have to stop you. They didn't pay attention. They're robbers. So they kept, they outnumbered the men. So they just kept doing their thing. So Arjuna tried to string his Gandiva bow, and he couldn't even string his Gandiva bow. Finally, he strung the bow and he tried to pull the bow back and he couldn't pull the bow back. He tried to fire arrows once he could pull the bow back, but the arrows fell short. And then he was calling by meditation celestial arrows and they didn't appear. And so he was helpless. So he started attacking them with the bowstring, or the bow stick. And they paid no attention. And they said they continued to plunder the queens and all their wealth. And they kidnapped them. So now, here's an interesting detail. Ready for an interesting detail? This is 11th canto, chapter 30, going back to 10th canto, chapter 83. 10th canto, chapter 83 is the solar eclipse at Kurukshetra, where the queens and the residents of Dwarka go to Kurukshetra, and there they meet the residents of Mathura and Hastinapur. And so the queens meet Draupadi. That's the title of the chapter. The queens meet Draupadi. And there's this comment, so I'm going to read because it's really nice. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur reminds us of the jealous rivalry that always existed between the queens of Dwarka and the gopis of Vraja. So the gopis toward the queens felt, why should Krishna come back here after winning a kingdom, killing his enemies, and marrying daughters of kings? That's the gopis towards the queens in Dwarka. And the queens of Dwarka, at least the eight principal queens, Rukmini and her seven chief co-wives, considered themselves so fortunate in their relationship with Krishna as he appeared in Dwarka that they did not especially desire to see him as he is in Vrindavan. This is Vishwanath's commentary. But the others, the 16,000 lesser queens, after hearing Uddhava's description of Sri Radha's super excellent qualities, became attracted to touch the dust that falls from Krishna's feet onto the grass and plants of Vrindavan. Last, Vishwanath Chakravarti indicates that some commentators give this as the reason why, after the Moshala Leela, these 16,000 queens were stolen from Arjuna on the road by Lord Krishna himself in the disguise of 16,000 cowherds, who then took them away to Goloka. That's Vishwanath for you. So Arjuna was empowered, but then that power was taken. So, you know, the practical application for us on the topic of Krishna Shakti is there's some service for all of us. But we can't do our service without empowerment from Krishna to do our service. During the winter retreat that was held here in Chicago, as I was coming down the stairs, it smelled like pizza. So I said to Sundari, pizza tonight? She said, no, that's just a whole batch of bread burned. Somehow it smelled like pizza. I don't know how the correlation between burned bread and pizza works out, but... So you may go to do some cooking for the devotees and it turns out to be burnt bread. Without Krishna Shakti, you can't even make nice bread. Without Krishna Shakti, you can't do anything. And if you're in false ego, you can't do anything. You can do stuff that's, you know, detrimental to your bhakti and detrimental to others, because to do something favorable to Krishna requires Krishna Shakti. To do even the simplest thing, baking bread, or clean the floor, or you know, walking out after the other class, there was a big puddle of water in the floor. You know, someone was busy trying to make the puddle of the on the floor clean. But to do anything properly, it requires the empowerment of Krishna. So Arjun felt terrible, but he had this, you know, little light went on that said, Krishna had given me power and Krishna took the power. For his own purposes, you know, these maybe what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, that some commentators say, maybe that was it. But so we don't know the outcome, how things come out. Our department is the service department, and results is Krishna's department. We don't try to do Krishna's job. We try to do service nicely and leave the result up to Krishna. And we require empowerment from Krishna for it to come out however it comes out. We still try our level best, sincerely effort making best, which can always be better, and the results are up to Krishna. That's our life as devotees. We're eager for Krishna's mercy, that our effort become blessed by him. So Arjuna is really distressed because he wants to serve Krishna, and the shakti to serve Krishna is gone. And he knows that why, at least that Krishna has taken it. Not why Krishna has taken it, but Krishna has taken it. So with whatever was remaining from that group of people that were traveling to Hastinapur, before he reached Hastinapur, one of the things he accomplished, which was an instruction to do so, he installed the great grandson of Krishna as the king of Mathura. Because what's going to happen later is the Pandavas are going to retire, but before the Pandavas retire, they install Parikshit. So at least the Mahabharata version says Arjuna did the installation. So Krishna's first son was Pradyumna. And Pradyumna's first son, Aniruddha. And Aniruddha's first son, Vajra. Krishna's great-grandson, the son of his son, Krishna's great-grandson, was installed in Mathura as the king. And then before he reached Hastinapur, he came to know that Vyasadeva was not far away. Because Vyasadeva served as like the instructing guru of the Pandavas. So he went to see. And, you know, he looked terrible. And Vyasadeva said, you look terrible. What happened? And he made some, maybe this, maybe that. Of course, he's Trikalagya, he knew. And Arjun said everything. And Vyasadeva said, don't lament. This has all happened according exactly to the plan of Krishna. Krishna didn't want those who would be empowered as representatives of him, descendants of him, as Kali Yuga progresses, the good qualities in the next generations will degenerate and they'll be invincible but degenerated persons. So the only way to prevent that is they remove themselves. So Krishna made the plan that they would remove themselves, because otherwise they wouldn't be removed. So Yudhisthira is the king, and the qualified son of Yudhisthira, or grandson of Yudhisthira, the grandson of the Pandavas, Parikshit, became the king. So Krishna's plan was fulfilled. So don't worry. And now the time for you and your brothers is over. Prepare yourselves to join Krishna where he has gone. Which was what he was thinking anyways, so that's what he did. That's how the Moshala Parva ends in Mahabharata. So the topic is Krishna Shakti. And even people that did bad stuff were empowered by Krishna to do the bad stuff. But we don't want to do the bad stuff. We want to do what was pleasing to Krishna. Just like Kamsa was very Krishna conscious, but he wasn't a bhakta. We don't want to be Kamsa. We want to be bhaktas that are thinking of Krishna and thinking favorably of what Krishna wants and receive the empowerment from, that's our life. So these histories are illustrating the diversity that's out there, but whoever we are, whatever we are, we're dependent upon Krishna's mercy. We're dependent, and we're dependent upon the potency, the empowerment of Krishna to do whatever we do. And if we want to advance, not if, since we want to advance on the path of bhakti, we require empowerment from Krishna to do that. So that's been a theme that I've been trying to share in our time together, and Krishna's pastimes are very nice. So let's see if there's some comments or questions. Any thoughts? Oh.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
How's your cold?
This point...
Is your cold getting better?
Somewhat better, yeah.
Doesn't sound better.
No.
Keep going.
The point that you make that in order to achieve something good in devotional service, we have to be empowered.
Yes.
Now, you find the position that you perform a service, say, cook the raj bhoga, and the devotees are very happy. It seems that Krishna is very pleased. You try to do it with the proper conscience. However, there is no doubt that there is the false egoist. I'm still, you know, controlled by my false ego. Same thing with so many other services that you may have this very positive result, at least externally. But you're still, you know, controlled by the false ego. So how exactly, is this have to do with mixed devotion and, so it's partially empowered, or, you know, how exactly it works when you perform devotional service but you're still afflicted by the false ego?
I get a little concerned when people put that adverb in there. Exactly. I'm responding to that word, first of all. Like, I was going to tell you not exactly instead of exactly. So you had to say exactly. Now I'm in the hot seat. I got to tell it as it is instead of otherwise. I'm just being myself. Sorry. How does it work when there's a mix? Well, it's a mix. That's how it works. It's like the sun when there's no clouds and sun when there's clouds. And then there's clouds that are really thick. And then there's like heavy rain clouds. What to speak of night. But night is when there's no devotional service, and devotional service is where there's clouds. So the full bhakti is pure, and the full impact and effect of bhakti, and that is the connection with Krishna, is less than full when there is false ego. That's how it works. That's a metaphor. It's not like exactly how does it work, but it's a metaphor to help us understand how it works. The covering of consciousness. But Krishna is accepting because he's very kind. And that's the happiness we feel. It's the connection with Krishna as he's accepting, even we're acting through false ego. So then there's degrees. That's how it works. There's degrees of effectiveness and
Should we say that because Krishna is accepting our his kindness, he's by that acceptance he gives us a particular amount of power to execute?
Yes, yes. Another metaphor that is very clear, besides the cloud metaphor, is the cooking pot and the flame. You hold the cooking pot some distance above the flame, and it's going to take longer to cook than if you hold the cooking pot right near the flame. The purifying effect is the Krishna connection effect, and it's going to be stronger or weaker depending upon how proximate, how our consciousness is directed to Krishna, as opposed to our consciousness is diffused by false ego and modes of nature. Karma bhakam yena sharira bandha. Okay? More?
I have one more thought, if you mind.
You want to, it's on the same topic, or you got the green light? You see the green light.
So sometimes there's a double source in thinking, okay, this is seems to be a nice execution of devotional service, then, oh, I did nicely. When Krishna is pleased.
Yes. When you cook Rajboga nicely, Krishna is pleased. Can you do better? Yes. Better than Krishna is pleased.
Is it dangerous to be, you know, thinking, okay, I did good?
Well, yeah. Well, let's go back to our earlier discussion about Namaha. And, you know, I did good. don't, that's false ego. So you can recognize that the language is important. There's conversational and conventional language that we say things like that. But the consciousness behind should be refined. And, you know, look at our great souls, look at Srila Prabhupada, and how he would speak about what he did. So, we want to know, is Krishna pleased? Let's say, you know, our book distribution marathon. You know, there's a goal, and we're striving to reach the goal, and we come close, and we reach the goal, and we celebrate. Krishna's mercy. But Krishna's mercy is crowning the effort. And then to put the two together, and Krishna's very kind. So, it's just a matter of how you see the same thing and how you speak the way that you see the same thing is important too. So feeling satisfaction that you cooked Rajboga offering and it was, you know, it came out nicely. There's a satisfaction that it was pleasing to Krishna, but not, you know, the language is important because it reflects the consciousness.
We'll say that that's a Namaha cultivation.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes. You got it. Mukunda, way in the back.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I just wanted to comment in relation to this whole progression, the Krishna wrapping up his path, his material world pastimes. And, I mean, as you were highlighting different aspects of this, you know, this ending times of his presence on earth, at the surface level, it's very disturbing.
Yes.
Like you pointed out, 560 million people killed.
Gosh.
And all of the queens being attacked by the robbers. And, just at the surface level, especially without, I mean, imagine if we were to hear this and not see it through the eyes of the scripture, it would be a very disturbing.
It's horrific.
Yeah. So I just wanted to comment and appreciate how Krishna was behind all of this.
Yeah.
And so that's very, I mean, it's thank God that we have the Shastra to tell us that, because that's a very beautiful backlay, you know, it's kind of reassuring that Krishna's arrangement is there, despite how disturbing this is.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something further and give the microphone to Nityananda Dipran between coughs. Let's see if he has something to say. Krishna's arrangement, when I reached the airport in Chicago, it was, the flight was on time, but the bags took like a half an hour to even start coming out. And Krishna's arrangement that Christina had a flight that came in early, and she didn't have any luggage, so we were able to ride back in the same car. So I took the opportunity to say, she was saying she's, anyway, I shared what the next topic is for the Memorial Day weekend, because she likes to go to the Memorial Day weekend because it's not so far from New York. And, you know, I said, lessons from Ramayana. And she said something like, you know, I don't know so much about Ramayana, but the people that I know that have read Ramayana, they just say it's very sad. Something like that. And I said something like, that's how people normally think of Ramayana that don't know what's behind Ramayana, but actually, it's ecstatic. Doesn't look ecstatic, it looks sad. And if you're looking through the lens of I'm the enjoyer, there's no enjoyment here. It's like sad and sad and, you know, close the book. There's a devotee somewhere here in our audience that said when he grew up, hearing Ramayana, he couldn't read the book anymore. And when he saw deities of Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, he couldn't stand before the altar to see the deities because all that sadness would come into his mind. So then I shared with him what I had learned from careful consideration of the sadness and sadness and sadness and sadness. And it's right in Rupa Goswami's teachings. It's an ecstasy. It looks like sadness. Like Krishna's departing from Vrindavan. Oh, look at that. It's snowing out. Krishna's departure from Vrindavan and the scene of sadness, more than sadness. Like, you know, they're throwing their bodies in front of the horses because they don't want they'd rather die than have Krishna leave, and et cetera, et cetera. So it looks really sad. But it's an ecstasy. And that's a mystery. There's lots of mysteries. Welcome to the world of mystery. And Rupa Goswami explains it very nicely, but without the explanation, it looks unhappy. When Narada Muni starts discussing Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, he starts to say, one pastime that we shouldn't talk about at all is Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. Because when people find out, if you get attached to Krishna, you know what's going to happen? Don't get attached to Krishna because that's going to happen. It's like Rupa Goswami saying, if you at all are attached to the pleasures of family life, don't go to Keshigat. Because in Keshigat, there's this little boy. And he plays upon his flute. And when he plays upon his flute, you forget all those things. So if you're attached to those things, don't go to Keshigat. So the appearance of spiritual... Here's another little Prabhupada story. There's some photographs of Prabhupada that devotees really like. And Prabhupada has this big smile. And you can like feel the radiance radiating from him. And he's laughing, and the whole group of devotees with him are laughing, and his abundant joy, you can feel it. So there was one photo where Prabhupada was in the back of 26 Second Avenue. He was looking very serious. So one devotee, or a guest, asked Prabhupada, I saw this photo of you, and you look really sad. And Prabhupada's immediate reply was, That was a moment of ecstasy. What was the guy going to say? Who knows what's in the mind and the heart of a pure devotee when he's looking like he's looking? And who knows what the... So, we can't enter into the mystery without those who are situated within that mystery, and they can reveal things to us. Otherwise, it remains a mystery, and we judge with the lens of the mind that's materially colored. You want to say anything about this topic, Nityananda Prabhu, specific to Ramayana or whatever else? Between coughs?
Thank you, Marat. on Mukunda's comment, he was appreciating that. He said, thank God we have scriptures to tell us or confirm that Krishna's hand is there. An edit, if you're okay with that. I would say it's already there in scripture, and that is how we know. But it is these acharyas, like you were reading from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and in that line, other acharyas, and you were explaining this, that it has to be reinforced by sadhus. That is when the context makes sense. Otherwise, like someone else may have read Ramayana and cannot fathom why a book is full of sorrow or sadness. It takes acharyas to unravel that mystery, as he said. So,
the microphone's going to come flying through the air and land in your hand. Just be a little patient.
Thank you. Thank you. Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is my question is. So Arjuna takes all the queens of Dwaraka, and he's not empowered like as you described. So I was just wondering, when in the presence of Krishna, he was empowered to do all the activities, but he was carrying the instruction of Krishna. So like when he was bringing the queens, but he didn't have that empowered to do that. So I was trying to understand that part of...
I'm trying to understand what you're trying to understand.
That empowerment is not there, so even though he's carrying...
It's not simply because Krishna wasn't there, whereas before Krishna was there. Krishna can be present or remote, doesn't matter. Empowerment can happen whether Krishna is present or remote. There was an intention of Krishna, which was fulfilled through Arjuna, and there was another intention of Krishna which was fulfilled through Arjuna. That is, his realization that I'm dependent upon Krishna. If Krishna takes away the empowerment, I can't do. That's a good realization, isn't it? Have you had that realization before?
Yes, ma'am.
She's smiling. It's a good realization. It's part of the picture. Does that answer your question?
Just a little clarification.
I'm really clear what the question is, because I'm not clear what the question is.
My question is basically focused on Arjuna is carrying the instruction of Krishna to take.
Yes.
So when he's doing that, carrying out the instruction, so, you know, why he couldn't able to do that, because he lost the empowerment, or that's the focused, my answer, my question is focused on that point.
Okay. In response, Krishna gave another instruction. Arjuna should take the ladies to Hastinapur for protection. That was an instruction. Arjuna, hearing that that was Krishna's instruction, was trying to carry out Krishna's instruction, and he couldn't do it because Krishna had withdrawn the power to do what was his instruction. Let's take like a really simple ISKCON example. distribute my books. And some people are really good at distributing his books, and some people just aren't really good at distributing his books. It's up to Krishna. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
And sometimes somebody that is really good at distributing books does terrible. Somebody that does terrible does really good. That's another nice lesson. We're dependent upon Krishna. And each of us have some... So, you distribute books whether you're good at it or not. Because it's universal instruction. Chant japa whether you're good at it or not. Because it's a general instruction. And you work on becoming good at it. Because it's an instruction. You carry the instruction in your heart, on your head, in your life. And empowerment is there. However it plays itself out, that's up to Krishna. Okay?
Okay. Thank you, Maharaj.
Yes, over here. Much better than Subal running around with this cold in the microphone. Go ahead.
Thank you. My question is not directly related to the class, but I was reading something from the introduction of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and I had a question on that. This is describing the conversation between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya and the debate going. So I'm going to read this paragraph here, or a part of it. The Lord further added that the Mayavad philosophy taught by Sripad Sankaracharya is an imaginary explanation of the Vedas. But it had to be taught by him.
But?
It had to be taught by him, Sankaracharya, because he was ordered to teach it by the personality of Godhead.
Right.
In the Padma Purana, it is stated that the personality of Godhead ordered his lordship Shiva to deviate the human race from him. The personality of Godhead was to be so covered so that people would be encouraged to generate more and more population. Now, the last two sentences was a little different and confusing to me, because I have always heard that Krishna always wants all souls to come back to him. But here it says his intention for preaching the Mayavad philosophy is to deviate the human race. So I'm trying to reconcile the two.
Sure. Take three deep breaths. And consider, along with creation comes bad stuff. There's not only the mode of goodness, which is conducive to going, bringing souls back to him. There's the option, there's the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance option out there in the menu. And persons, as Kali Yuga progresses, it becomes more ignorance, a lot of passion and more ignorance until it's just ignorance as it goes down and down and down and down and down. So what Krishna wants, on the one hand, is souls come back to him, but also Krishna gets sanctions free will, or he doesn't interfere with free will. And those who in the age of Kali go more towards darkness and darkness and darkness, he facilitates that, although that's not his volition. He facilitates. This is a facilitation of that. An example of facilitating that. You know, Brahma does the same thing. He has to create bad stuff along with good stuff, because creation has both. We were discussing this in relation to the Dhruva story. In the beginning part of chapter 8 of Canto 4, he creates bad stuff. Falsity, irreligion, envy, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He creates it. And he doesn't, it's not lovely. Hey, I get to create this bad stuff. It's there because it's a force within this world of duality that goes down. So, as Brahma does, the the sanction for to Brahma to do what Brahma does comes from the Supreme Lord, who, on the one hand, desires living entities to come back to him. On the other hand, he's facilitating their misuse of free will, especially as Kali Yuga progresses and goes further and further, and he facilitates it.
The specific place where I think, or my understanding, which is confusing me is, if the intention is to deviate, if somebody is coming towards me, I can deviate them. If there's already facility for them to forget me, I don't have to do anything to deviate them.
Well, he doesn't have to do anything. He facilitates their debt deviation. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I don't see the problem. Just like, you know, why does the state create a prison? You don't have to, like, invite people to be prisoners, but you have a prison in case people... It's like that. So that in this dark age of Kali, it's facilitated. He doesn't have to do anything, but he's facilitating that inclination that they have. And he's keeping that another explanation that's, you know, I don't want to complicate your question, but another picture of what Shankaracharya is doing, or what Lord wants Shankaracharya to do, is people that are atheistic, they can go over there. They can be atheistic in this way. You know, impersonal Brahman. Or philosophized impersonal Brahman, not even Brahman. So the integrity of the personality of Godhead is kept intact, sacrosanct. So those persons have a channel to come to him, and those persons that don't want to come, they have another place to go to. Here comes our squeaky curtains. Oh, Gajendra Moksha, please do something. I don't know if I'm going to satisfy you because, you know, your question is still there. I can sense it. And to me, it's really clear. The response is, he's not encouraging anything. He's facilitating. He doesn't interfere with free will. He's facilitating free will. He didn't have to do anything. He didn't have to do anything. He's facilitating their free will. What he wants is, come back to me. No. Okay. I want something else. Okay. And those that have that, I want something else, here's the facilitation for that something else. There's consequences, but you know, you want. So here's the facilitation arrangement, or at least one of them. Okay. He's not satisfied. Anyone else? Yeah, you do.
Guru Maharaj, thank you. Two questions. One, I want to hear how the inhabitants of Vrindavan departed.
Exactly, right? I want to know exactly how they departed. They entered into Aprakat from Prakat. That's how. In different ways, they entered into Aprakat. The curtain, just like, you know, the curtain closed and you can't see. The Nitya Leela is going on and the curtain closed. Krishna's pastimes ended and the resident of Vrindavan, they entered into Aprakat Leela. Now, the methodology, different personalities had different methodologies, and I'm at the moment not remembering what those methodologies are, but that's the principle. Okay? Next.
This is follow-up on the Namaha from the morning. Some services require a complete negation of false ego.
I'm listening.
Somewhere we can engage our psychophysical nature and move on.
Well, wait a minute. If you engage your psychophysical nature, does that mean therefore you're acting through false ego? Is that what you're saying? Because if that's what you're saying, you've misunderstood what namaha means. Namaha means I don't have independence. So here's my nature, whatever it is. It's been given to me by Krishna, whatever it is. And I'm offering what was given to me by Krishna to Krishna. Hmm.
Like you mentioned in the morning, there is a principle and then there is a detail to follow on application.
I did say that. Keep going.
Whereas some services, it's like, you know, 100% there is no room to apply some details on it.
To apply what?
Some details.
I don't know what you're talking about. Keep going.
Two things that comes in my mind as well. One is like deity worship, there is a standards. There is no room to...
Well, wait a minute. Our pujaris, some pujaris dress the deity this way and that way. Some make small circles with the incense, some make larger circles with the incense. Some ring the bell this way, some ring the bell that way.
And the second thing I had in mind is, while I'm serving you in your room, Marge, I feel like, you know, when you ask, this is how it's supposed to be, then it's complete negation. You know, there is no question of independence over there.
Oh, come on, you have independence. You can't pull the wool over my eyes. He's laughing. Anything over here? Yes, one question over here. And then we're done. Whoops. Okay, go ahead, and then...
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So, if you are worrying or fearing while doing the service, whether you will be able to please Krishna or not, whether this service will go proper or not, is that an indication of lack of faith in empowerment or something?
If you're wondering if it's come out nicely, is that an indication of lack of faith? Is that what your question is?
If you are worried or fearing about
if the you're in fear proper, about it, it's not going to come out nicely?
You want to please Krishna and the outcome needs to be proper and well performed. So if you are worrying and fearing about it, then is it an indication of lack of faith in empowerment?
It's an indication of false ego. Bodily conception, according to the Bhagavatam. It's an indication of bodily conception. And bodily conception has a whole package, which includes the items you mentioned. But specifically in the language of the Bhagavatam, it's an indication of false ego. Now over your left shoulder, she has a question. No? Okay. Then over here, last question. Okay, tomorrow.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is a continuation of Subal Prabhu's question earlier he had.
Without exactly in it.
Yes, as Prabhu mentioned about how subtly the false ego when doing a service, you know, being the enjoyer or having, you know, I did. At what stage, when, as we are purifying, is it, as you mentioned again a bit, you mentioned it takes Krishna Shakti even to wash the floors right way, you know, do any service.
Yeah.
So my question is, as we are purifying, is it also takes empowerment to see those anarthas? Because in conditioned
yes.
life, yeah, go just we walk through everything.
Yes, but it takes a willingness to look inside, to be able to look inside. Because otherwise, going to be, the, you know, looking somewhere else. But yeah, take Krishna Shakti to do even the inside as well as the outside stuff. We're done. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai.
Hare Krishna.